I'd have to say, you know, one of my rules of walking the floor tomorrow is, you know, often it's new name, old game. And so much of what we see in this space of so-called personalized, individualized, you know, we saw back in the 80s.
And welcome back again, everyone, to the Modern Learners Podcast. I'm Will Richardson, and that was my good friend Bruce Dixon. And if you're wondering what floor he's talking about walking, it's the floor at the ISTE conference here in San Antonio, where both Bruce and I are spending the good part of a week learning more about technology, thinking more about technology, working on Change School and all the other good stuff that is going on in our intellectual worlds. But the focus is ISTE, which is the major technology conference in the United States, certainly, and perhaps in the entire world. And as we get into what promises to be another technology-filled few days, Bruce and I are thinking about initials and the types of technologies that are sure to be on the forefront of the vendor floor that opens tomorrow night. So welcome to this episode about virtual reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, or AR, VR, and AI, and BS is the name of this podcast. And as you'll see, we kind of pick it apart. We hope you enjoy it. If you do, go to our iTunes page and give us a rating and make a comment. And don't forget, we have a SpeakPipe app on our page at modernlearners.com where you can come in and leave us a message, a voicemail, ask a question, and we'd be happy to include that in our podcast for next week. But for now, sit back and relax as we talk a little bit about the new technologies that we're sure are going to be the talk of the town in San Antonio this week. Well, hey, Bruce, how you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. How's yourself?
I'm doing really well. How's the weather down in... Oh, wait a second.
Hey, that's right.
This is the first time ever in our podcast we're in the same room doing a podcast.
Same time, same place.
It's an amazing thing.
Amazing,
I think that those airplanes are just, they're just really incredible technologies, aren't they? It's stunning.
It is.
So why don't you tell everyone where we are?
We are in beautiful downtown San Antonio in Texas for ISTE. ISTE 2017, and it's going to be a rather large occasion, 16,000 people, we think.
Yeah, that's a big party.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But exciting, and, you know, I found out some today about you, Bruce, that I didn't know, that you were at the first three ISTEs back in the 1800s, was that?
Yeah, it was. It's a long time ago, but I can vaguely remember them. But they weren't ISTEs then, they were NECCs.
Didn't you do a presentation on the telegram or something, or what was that?
Morse code.
Morse code.
Morse code, right. Yeah, it wasn't. The telegram hadn't been around, hadn't been invented then, but... Yeah, and I like to think, I mean, I've been to a lot, and I haven't been to all of them, and I guess, I think the roll call for the longest serving, most sustainable commitment to ISTEs is definitely going to Gary Steiger.
Who has been at every single one?
30, and he's presented at 30.
Our friend Gary Steiger, who will be in tomorrow night, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That is that is quite a record.
They should call him up on stage and give him a gold medal.
Yes, they should.
So
well, it's exciting to be back at ISTE, no matter how many years it's been. You know, we've been talking a little bit about what to expect this year and trying to figure out what the big presentations and technologies are going to be. And I think all of us would agree that we are moving into the world of initials.
Yeah, I thought probably, you know, this podcast we should talk about VR.
Yeah.
AR.
Okay.
And BS.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know what AR and VR are, or AI and VR are, but what's BS, Bruce? So what are you thinking? I mean, so augmented reality.
Yeah.
And
artificial intelligence, virtual reality.
So really there's three there, right?
Wow.
AR, AI, VR.
Yep.
And those are all kind of on the edge right now, right? In terms of making inroads into schools and in some pretty big ways. I know when I hear about this stuff, you know what I think about, right?
Yeah.
Second Life. Because, you know, it kind of...
Changed schooling. Changed schooling forever.
Now watch, don't step on our you know, our change.school thing that's going on. But, yeah, so Second Life, so if anyone who's listening to this doesn't remember Second Life, that was, what, about probably 10 years ago or 8 or 9 years ago?
And it was at least 10.
And it was... well, that was artificial reality.
Yeah, it was sort of like a virtual reality sort of made up little planet place. So I actually remember coming to at least two ISTEs where it was front and center.
And I remember, and I can't name any names here, but I remember a school superintendent who cornered me at ISTE. Back then it was called NEC, I think.
Yep.
And she basically, because I was skeptical. And
no.
I had written some things on
my
blog.
You didn't drink the Second Life Kool-Aid.
Because it was virtual. but I was a little skeptical of Second Life. And she literally cornered me and she said, you cannot go around and not, you know, not talk about Second Life in the sense that it is going to change everything that we do.
And yeah.
She was very, very... I'd say belligerent.
I was going to say belligerent is often.
So obviously these types of technologies get people's passions up, and I'm sure when we get on the vendor floor tomorrow, we're going to see these things. But if I had to ask you, and I'm going to cede to you a little bit during this conversation, because I think you probably have a little bit of a better perspective on some of these things, at least than I do. But if I had to say to you, which of the three, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, or virtual reality, are those the three? Which of those three do you think will have the biggest splash in education?
Well, you know, I think the problem we've got is that people look at these things as sort of life-changing in a very short time. And they think that, you know, like they did with Second Life, all of a sudden everyone was going to tell us, well, you know, we're going to have online lectures and classes and people from all around the world are going to come in with their little, you know, doobies, little...
Clickers
and whatever else, and participate in the whole process. And the truth is, of course, all this takes a long, long time. And something like virtual reality and augmented reality and artificial intelligence are all going to have their place, you know, particularly virtual reality. And I mean, artificial intelligence is everywhere we blink. And I think, you know, in the first instance, the problem is people misinterpret what they actually mean. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't really know and understand where it all fits.
Well,
and
so let's talk about that a little bit, okay. Right? So let's define some terms. So okay. When we say artificial reality, what are we talking about?
Well, augmented reality. If we're talking about augmented reality, is an environment where we put.
See, I can't even keep them straight here, right? So it's like
that's putting a virtual icon or a virtual being or a virtual object inside real scenes.
So that's like Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go was the best example of augmented reality.
And so as you're walking down the street looking through your phone, you see things that aren't really there, but you do see what is there as well, right?
Yeah.
So it's layered on what actually exists.
And so the question for schools would be, well, where would this have some relevance? And I'm sure as people walk around the floor tomorrow, there'll be many vendors who probably come up with some examples of where that can be used. But the question becomes, you know, what are your priorities? I mean, do you really have to spend whatever amount of money it is to be able to use this, you know, new technologies? And how critical is it to the whole space that they need to be focused in?
So that holds true for any of these, right? But
yeah,
let's just go through and define terms. So then virtual reality.
Yeah, well, I think everyone, we sort of know what that is. There was I must say, okay, of all the things that I've seen in virtual reality, and a lot of these realities have grown dramatically out of the gaming environment.
Right.
And that's, you know, if you're a gamer, online gamer, you live in these spaces. I mean, that's their space. That's what they do. And it's not to say, again, that, you know, there's not going to be a role for these things in schools. But I remember walking into a school in Singapore 5 years ago, and the principal there had huge plans about making a room, a virtual reality room. And he just kept talking about what he was going to be doing there. And then I'll switch quickly to 8 weeks ago, another school that I was in, actually in Australia. And the principal again there was talking about how he was going to use it in really creative ways. And firstly, they were well intended.
Right.
They weren't, and the basis of what they were trying to do was to be celebrated. But the extent of which the technology was involved, the investment that would be required, the distraction, I think, that a lot of that would cause, you've got to question it all. I mean, if you want to look at some of these spaces, yes, I think it's a fantastic space for gaming. I think the other day I happened to see a show on BBC which had a virtual reality see-through imaging technique. It must have cost a fortune to make the show, walking around Florence. And so as you walked around Florence, you saw the real Florence, and I love Florence and that whole area there. But you could see through the school, you could see through the buildings, And it was the most extraordinary way. So someone here had captured a couple of these technologies. They'd weaved them, stitched them together, and I would think it had cost millions of dollars to make this show. But at the end of it, you were highly informed about the realities of architecture at that time.
So that's what it would be. It would be taking kind of a virtual immersion, immersed tour of certain places or certain experiences. So when, you know, when we were driving or in an Uber the other day, yesterday in San Antonio, we saw a virtual reality display on a street corner. And it was interesting in that it was being kind of sponsored by PETA or PETA, with the, what is it, the ethical treatment of animals, right?
So lovely.
We didn't stop.
No,
but,
we didn't.
I can guess that basically if you put the goggles on, and there were a couple people on the corner with goggles on, kind of, that you would see, I'm sure, whales or seals or endangered species or whatever else. Is there value in that?
Well, I mean, again, I just think it's priorities. It's not to say that, you know, that may well help them raise funds, and that's a lovely thing if it has.
But I guess the question is, in a school setting, if you can't go to the animals, can you bring the animals in a way that is worthwhile using virtual reality?
I'm going to take a slightly cynical view on it.
Okay.
Because I think that's certainly, the example you've given is probably the most common one. The virtual reality, and people talk about that. You know, we've got kids in economically challenged environments who will never actually get to see these things. And my first question is, well, if they're economically challenged environments, how much are you going to spend on virtual reality gear to allow them to see this stuff? Oh, well, then we can just use the same gear showing them different. Come on. I mean, really and truly, the difference between, you know, them being able to see that sort of engagement, and as I said, turning on a television set and seeing this done on the BBC in a way, I'm sorry, I just can't be convinced that it's worth the investment.
Well, according to a great commercial that I saw from Samsung on TV, however, virtual reality is a powerful emotional thing because after, you know, these certain people took the goggles off, they were crying. I mean,
marvelous.
They had tears coming.
And I never do that when I watch television, ever. No movies, I ever get tears. I never get emotional. That is tongue-in-cheek. Of course we do. I mean, it's all relative.
Right.
You know? And I just think this is part of our problem in Change School, because here we are saying to people, you've got to be aware of what's happening outside. You've got to be aware of the changing. You've got to be aware of the impact emerging technologies are having on the way we live and learn. But the realities are that the technologies we're talking about aren't these extreme technologies. And again, we'll qualify what we're saying. It's not that we don't think that VR and AR and AI aren't going to have a role to play in our lives in the future. It's just today, 2017. For my money, I'd rather we were more focused on other areas.
So doesn't someone have to lead? Though, I mean, if we're saying that in 10 years or 15 years, that virtual reality will have a role to play in a classroom and will bring experiences to kids that perhaps they can't experience on their own, and those will be valuable in a learning context. I mean, is that possible, first of all, 15 years, you think? You're skeptical about that.
No.
I think this is one of the things about being in the same room as you this time, right? Because I can read your face. I don't have to try to imagine what you're thinking over the Pacific somewhere.
Yeah.
So you seem a little bit skeptical around that. Because I'm sure that one of the arguments that a lot of people are going to make is, look, this is absolutely a technology that's going to have an impact. But, we're still trying to figure out what that impact is. And here's an opportunity to do some R&D or to experiment, be first to the space, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, why?
Why? I mean...
So my unfortunately, my experience has been that in some, and I only say some, In some cases, people want to be first to the space for reasons other than add learning opportunities for their kids.
Yeah.
It's to do with ego, to do with marketing, to do with profile or whatever those mm-hmm. things. And I'd say I've seen that happen too often. And, you know, I'm hard pushed to be thinking of a time when I've heard parents say, you know, this school does okay and everything's good in this school, but if only my kids could have more virtual experiences with animals, it would be far better off. You know, I know, to some people it's going to sound like sacrilege that I'm saying these things, but I just anchor ourselves down in a bit of reality. You know, let's get real about this stuff. I mean, I think back a number of years, I won't go back as far, and I always had a desire to be involved in developing simulations, and I did. I built a couple that I developed that were very successful and distributed to schools all across Australia. And the problem with simulations back then and even today is you write a drill and test program or you write some sort of so-called personalization program. You know, you can write it between now and midnight. Someone comes along and says, I want you to do a serious simulation of an environment on a screen. That costs a lot of money. And that's why the gaming community, they've been able to, because that's where the investment's being made. And we've still got a long way to go before we even make good of the need for high quality, you know, simulations that kids can use. I mean, science is a classic example. Talk about mathematics. And there are a number around. A lot of them have come down from sort of research work that's been done in the universities. But we're only just starting to tap into what we can do in that space now. You add another layer over the top of that and say, oh, let's simulate some environments. If we can do it and add as an addition to what we can do with simulating environment, that's great. But it's a very, very, very costly exercise.
So let's talk then about the one that I think probably is having the most impact right now on our lives that most people don't even realize, and that's artificial intelligence. And,
yeah, that's a good one.
And I think that there's no question that algorithms and that machine learning and that all those types of things are already making inroads into just the way that we live.
Yeah. Without people realizing it.
And look, I don't think either one of us would hold ourselves up as the poster children for understanding that either, right?
But our colleague Audrey Waters, we would.
Well, yeah. And looking at the ways in which algorithms are beginning to drive the decisions that we make, again, without us knowing it, or kind of subliminally in ways that we're not aware of, and also in terms of just increasing amounts of data and the kind of crunching of all those numbers and everything else. I mean, certainly there are people who think that artificial intelligence is going to take away lots of jobs. It's going to change careers. Anyway, huge effects. And I think most people would agree that there's no question it's going to and already has an effect. But there are people who are, again, really skeptical as to how much of an effect that's going to be. Our friend Roger Schenck is one who was an AI developer, constantly comes out and says most of the stuff that people are writing about AI right now is basically BS.
Yep.
That there's not, you know, even though now that we can no longer win chess matches against, you know, Watson,
and
we can't win Go games, and I'm not really even sure what that means, but anyway, that seems to be a big deal. that doesn't mean anything, really, because AI will never have human emotion, will never have the kind of human decision-making aspect that is so crucial in so much of what we do, right? So I wonder, though, what that means for schools. I wonder what that means in terms of how we think about kids. And,
let's dangle it back to your favorite word, personalization.
Okay.
So that's, you know, talk about BS. We just keep coming back to it, don't we? And the best example, and it's often hard, again, because we're trying to talk in a couple of some specifics here to people listening to the podcast, because half the problem people have with these new technologies, they talk in generalities.
That's right.
Sweeping generalities.
Yep.
And so people talk about this notion of personalized learning, and they think that it means everything to everybody, and often it means nothing to nobody. And I'd have to say, you know, one of my rules of walking the floor tomorrow is, you know, often it's new name, old game. And so much of what we see in this space of so-called personalized, individualized, you know, we saw back in the 80s. It was literally, I mean, the program there, and I think it might even still be around, but there was a thing called Success Maker, which was fondly referred to as Sausage Maker, because we kept thinking that's what it was going to turn out. But all they are is a series of, you know, we can all sit here, everyone listening to this podcast can do it. You know, you know how the learning sequence goes. You're teaching numeration, you can do two-digit numeration, you got that right twice, then we're going to give you a three-digit numeration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as Roger and yourself and everyone else says, you know, if that's all that's required for kids to get a deep understanding of mathematics, to be able to think mathematically, let's just sweep ourselves out the door and put some machines on the desks. It's complete rubbish. I mean, it's as far away from reality as you can imagine. It doesn't mean to say that there aren't some places and some examples of where so-called adaptive learning, which is a variation of what we're talking about, doesn't have a role. And the best example I can think of that is road license testing. You know, I often think of that as an example of where it's
that,
been.
For those of you who didn't understand that means getting your driver's license.
Getting your driver's license, yeah, okay. So now I'm over here up here, right? Getting your driver's license, where basically if you really know your stuff and you know your question, you know your answers and you know your road rules, you shouldn't have to go through exactly the same series of questions to answer, because this is literally drill and test. We know what you have to remember. There's certain things you have to know by rote. And that's an example of where adaptive testing has a role. If you're smart and you know all the answers, you're going to do less questions than the others. But within the school environment, you know, I've got a lot, you know, it's a hard sort of, hard to impress on me that there's any role for that approach. It can support what you're doing in the classroom, but as for leading it, and we'll walk in there tomorrow and we will see 20 companies with examples, variations on the same theme. And I think it's really sad because there's too much money spent in that space.
So I'm not sure that there'll be too many people down on the vendor floor selling, air quotes here, artificial intelligence, right?
Because no.
That's not those aren't the words that are going to be used in there.
No.
But certainly personalization, and they're going to be algorithmic types
yep.
of technologies
yep.
that are going to be everywhere
yep.
down there. And it's going to be probably pretty difficult to sort out exactly what all that stuff does, but and how it does it. But so I tweeted out today, and you know, whenever I come to ISTE,
what's the question you want people to ask?
Well, there are two questions that I want people to ask, and we're going to try to ask this question to a few people
yep.
and hopefully do some live Zooming stuff. And although by the time people hear this podcast, it'll probably be done, but you can find it somewhere in our Facebook page. But the two questions are, so first of all, if you're going to say virtual reality, learning with virtual reality or you know, personalized learning or whatever else, first question is obviously, well, define it. Define learning. What do you mean by that? And my suspicion, if this year's ISTE is like past year's ISTE and NEC and whatever, people will have some difficulty just with that simple basic question. They'll have trouble defining exactly what it is, or at least figuring out. You could probably go to five different people in the same booth and get five different answers as to what
absolutely
it means, right?
Yep.
But then the second one is, and I think the second one's even more important in some way for the fact that they're on the vendor floor, and that is, how does this particular product increase agency over learning to the learner, right? So let's talk about that in the context of virtual reality. How does putting goggles on increase agency over learning for a particular learner? Now, my sense of it is that the VR stuff that's going to be on the vendor floor is curriculum based.
Mm-hmm.
That most of the stuff that's going to be sold, and be happy if I'm wrong, but I'm thinking most of the stuff that people are pitching in the VR space are connected somehow to the pace and you know, scope of the curriculum.
Let me give you a quick example.
Okay.
So the particular principal who was talking to me about VR in Australia, he's a very thoughtful and a brilliant leader, and he said to me, you know, there are going to be a lot of problems with VR in the room. He said, imagine we've got a room and the kids have all got the goggles on. He said, and you know, let's say we're looking at the ruins or looking at the buildings, the architecture of Florence. He said, and one kid will be walking over in one corner and they'll be in one part of Florence, and another kid will be over in another part of the corner
right.
and they'll be in another. is that what we want? Do we want them to be able to make their own choice about what they can actually see? Or are we going to show them all the same piece at the same time?
Well, you would think that if you're going to provide Florence as an experience for kids, that you would allow them to explore it on their own.
Wouldn't you? Hey.
But how do you assess that then?
Yeah.
How do you assess their
Because they're going to see different things. Goodness me.
And so, you know, but that is the problem, right? In that, could VR be pretty interesting for kids who don't have the potential to actually go to Florence or to go to the museum or to see the animals or whatever? Yeah, as long as we call it what it is, which is a halfway measure that in no way replaces the real thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that there's probably some value to it, but certainly not at the expense of doing things in the real world.
That's
doing
right.
things in real life.
That's right.
And that's where I fear, again, that we will look at these technologies and begin to just measure them by the cool factor. Oh,
exactly.
Yes, my kids went to Florence virtually.
And absolutely. They went, how cool is that?
Yeah.
But you look at Pokemon. Now, to be really honest with you, I thought that was really, really smart. It was a really smart, really cool, the simplest idea you could ever have. It was a digital. It was a digital treasure hunt with a few little fancy bits on the end.
And a huge, huge, just like tidal wave of interest.
Momentum.
When it came out.
Yep.
I mean, it was huge.
Massive.
I mean, I remember I was down in Georgia, and we were out one night, like a week after it came out, and Tucker, you know, my son had it on his phone, and we were kind of trying to walk around and figure it out. There must have been 24 people in this small town park who were all walking out looking for, you know, looking through their phones just. And now I can't remember if I've seen it in the last six months.
No.
And I don't know what's happening with Pokemon Go, but my suspicion is, well, I haven't heard much about it at all lately.
No.
And, you know, it's kind of gone into the Second Life trash heap of, you know, of really cool things for a short period of time that die out because, you know what? They're not real.
Yeah.
It doesn't end up substituting for real life experience and real life learning.
And, you know, the thing that I'm thinking of, and I'm going to link back and do our normal little referral to Change School. And we say, you know, reimagination is required. I think the problem is that in many cases what we want from people is more imagination with existing technologies. We have been swamped in the last decade.
Great point.
You know, let's just think more imaginatively about the way we're using the technologies that are currently available to us. And, you know, we've given so many kids now have access to their own personal, portable, fully functional computer, which is our colleague Gary Stagerfer's intellectual laboratory. And just think about the things that we can do with what we have rather than trying to look for the next best thing, because there isn't the next best thing. And when we're walking across the floors tomorrow and at any time anyone's in these technology exhibitions, you know, the biggest isn't the best. You're looking for the people who are smart, the people who've thought about technologies maybe that have been around for a little while, but are real smart ways of now using them that may not be very expensive, but may have huge impact on learning.
You know, and as you said that, I was thinking about the fact that most of the technologies and most of the programs and whatever else that we'll see tomorrow were not developed with those two questions in mind.
No, not at all.
They weren't developed with a defined kind of understanding, well-defined, articulated understanding of learning.
That's right.
And they weren't defined in the context of bringing more agency over learning to the learner. They were primarily defined in a teaching context.
Yeah, about control.
About doing things better. We talk about this all the time, right? Doing the wrong thing righter.
Yep.
And so that's why I don't think they end up having a huge impact, because they're not technologies. Well, this is my other question too. How would my student or my kid use that technology out of school, outside of school, right? Is this something that, you know, is a real life technology, or is it something that's just a school kind of context technology? But the other part, as you were saying that, the other thing that came to me was something that Missy Emler said, you know, when we were talking earlier today, and that is that the vendor floor is like the grocery store, you know, that the good stuff is out on the edges.
Yeah.
And we both know this,
I agree
too,
with it.
That there are people who are thoughtful, who are thinking about learning, who are thinking about agency.
Absolutely.
Who would probably look at some of the tools that we're kind of calling BS here.
Yep.
And you know, create some really interesting things around them.
Yep.
And the problem is, however, unfortunately, is that they're probably too complex, or they probably don't follow the curriculum, or they probably, you know, they probably don't you know, map the school experience in ways that they can possibly scale.
Yep.
And you want scale, then you don't really change school, right? You don't really mess with the whole kind of way school operates right now. You just kind of tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the point. It's interesting you raise that, because I was just thinking as you were saying that. All right, if you go back a number of those decades, go back to the success maker decades, and I think I'm talking late 80s, you know, I can think of one of the products which, and rest in peace, but Bob Tinker died this week. And Bob was at the Concord Consortium, and Gary wrote a beautiful eulogy in just this week. But one of his many developments or design, he designed or was involved in the design of Zoom beanies. And I remember walking around one of these shows, and there were, you know, over in the corner, over in the far corner, was this little Zoom beanie stand, which I think from memory Brodabund ended up buying or something. But no one took it seriously at the time, yet as a piece of design, it was genius, because he'd used his imagination with what was available at the time. And, you know, people might think, oh, you're going a bit hard on the vendors at time here. Look, I've just about finished a book called Class Clowns, and it's a story of these failures of large corporations that have invested in, I mean, billions of dollars in products that just didn't meet the needs of those questions you asked. And, you know, most recently, I suppose, I've got to throw in Bloom up there, which is, what, $100 million? Trying to personalise learning. And that money went in the space of 2.5 years. And yet over in the corner, you know, someone over here who probably got a fraction of $1 million budget has done some amazing imagining about what they can do. And they don't have the biggest stand, and they don't have the flashiest neons and whatever else, but they're doing some of the really smart stuff. So not for one second are we trying to say that, you know, the vendor floor doesn't have some amazing things, but sometimes you got to look under the covers a little bit to see them.
It does beg the question as to whether or not schools have the capacity to understand and employ technologies in learning contexts in the ways that can really change them. And I mean, that's the work we're doing, right?
That's right.
I mean,
that's
at the end of the day, that's the work we're trying to do. And it's really hard work. So the you know, the idea that we can walk down on the vendor floor tomorrow and we can see all these great technologies, and you and I are probably looking at them through this lens of those two questions, but most people down there aren't.
No.
Most people are looking at them through a very, very different lens. And it would be interesting, maybe, as we're down there, to talk to some people who are looking at these technologies as well.
That'd be good.
And, you know, ask them, so what makes you interested in this? And what is it that is the appeal here?
Yeah,
without asking them what they mean about learning, or without asking them anything about agency, but just to see what's the starting point that people bring when they go down on the and see some of these booths.
Well, as we're sort of coming to the end of this, I think, you know, you've got to apply it another level to the questions that you've raised, because I think back to some of the really disastrous buying decisions that we've seen in technology over the years. And I've got to again flag, you know, what happened in LA, which was, you know, over $1 billion spent there inappropriately.
On iPads, yeah.
On iPads. And the questions weren't asked. Those questions were never asked. It was a question of how quickly can we get these shiny new objects into the hands of our kids, create a lot of publicity, and, you know, get rewarded for it. And that had nothing to do with learning. It had nothing to do with agency. Nobody took the time to reflect on what other people had done, the incisions they'd made. So when it's all said and done, what we've always said at Modern Learners, we're trying to help people be better informed to make better decisions for kids.
And, you know, just to wrap it up, if we're asking schools to start with those questions, or to make every decision that they make through the lens of what is learning, will this advance learning? I mean, we talk about this all the time, you know, in our groups, with every budget decision, every technology decision, every hiring decision, staffing decision, you know, everything should be looked at through that particular lens, yeah. Why wouldn't we expect the same of the technologies that people end up, you know, pitching on the vendor floor? I mean, why wouldn't we expect that that would be where they would start too? But unfortunately,
it doesn't happen that
that's
way.
That's not the case.
No.
Well, mate, we will go down there and check it out tomorrow and Tuesday.
Report from the floor.
Maybe we'll try to do some live reports from the floor that will be archived for those of you listening to this podcast well after. But looking forward to it. Good to see you this time.
Face good to be face. Talking
what
in the same room.
What a concept. Yep. I know. It doesn't happen very often these days. But anyway. So thanks very much for listening, everyone. And join us again next week for another episode of the Modern Learners Podcast. Don't forget to head on over to iTunes and give us a review if you like what you're hearing. And obviously tell your friends as well. And we will see you online. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Hey, thanks for listening. And don't forget to come back next week for another conversation between Bruce and me about high bar change in schools. If you haven't read our latest white paper on the 8 attributes of modern educational leaders, you can head over to bit.ly/8attpod and download it. And if you're really getting serious about change in schools and you're a leader who wants to learn how to do that and connect with all sorts of other people from around the world who are doing that, please visit us at change.school, where we're already taking signups for our third cohort that starts in September. So we hope to see you there as well. Have a great week, everyone, and thanks again for listening.